Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
Among some futurists, the ability to upload a mind into an artificial neural network is seen as a way to beat death, to extend oneself beyond a single biological lifespan. In theory, if the information and processes of the brain could be captured, copied, and transferred to another container, say, for example, a technological singularity which mimics the functions of the brain, this might be possible. But in the end, would such an amalgam be a continuation of a life or the creation of something else? And would we consider it alive? And if there were more than one copy, what would that mean? In this month's story, Fosmar Gunnarsson, the founder of a large international technology company, creates the ultimate innovation. A system that copies the brain and uploads it to an artificial neural net. When he is suddenly diagnosed with a terminal disease, Fosmar uses the not-quite-yet-perfected system on himself so he can beat his untimely death and continue to run his company. But not everyone who works with him is happy to see him become the first post-human CEO. We invite you now to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 96, An Ordinary Day. Somewhere in some time, if there were two copies of your mind, which one would be you? It was just an ordinary day when Fosmar Gunnarsson died. A brilliant winter sun, low in the southern sky, reflecting off the snow, streamed through a small window into the specially built transition room, made all the floating dust particles sparkle like stars. "That's odd," was one of Fosmar's last thoughts, as an unseen technician whisked by his bed, sending the tiny particles spinning, dancing on the newly disturbed air currents that carried a faint, familiar scent to Fosmar's failing nostrils. "Where have I smelt that before? How odd that there's so much dust in a clean room," he mused, then died. Outside the building, cars continued to wind their way along the snowbank-lined streets. A kilometer away, a school bell rang, marking the end of recess. 100 kilometers away, a bank teller accidentally moved someone's life savings into the wrong account. And unexpectedly, in a secret data center halfway around the world, petabytes of empty storage space began to fill up. And the world continued its relentless rush into the future, leaving Fosmar Gunnarsson's lifeless body behind.
I don't understand. The neural scan and upload completed successfully."
A puzzled, nervous technician, dressed in a white cleanroom lab suit, protested defensively through the intercom, checking the logs again.
But the data. The data's all gone. He's gone."
Perspiring, the technician turned to face the others standing behind the thick glass of the observation room.
I don't know what happened. The scan was completed before he passed, and the upload was confirmed by the data center. However, when I tried to initialize his construct, there was nothing there. No data at all. No files to initialize."
"Are you sure you checked the local data buffers?"
another stressed technician inquired over the intercom.
"Of course, that was the first thing I did. They're empty. They only kick in if there's a transfer problem, and there wasn't one. I told you that already. We've done hundreds of transfer tests, and there's never been a problem."
"Record the time of death as 12:12 p.m.
the attending physician stated impassively. No one in the small group assembled behind the glass wall to witness the transition shed a tear.
"Just a reminder for all of you. His will is a blog post on a dead man switch. If he had made the transition, he was going to reset the post date."
Jason, the head of corporate legal, reminded the small group who had crowded into the observation room. He checked the date on his handheld.
"That will be in, another 20 days. And no, I don't know what's in it. The blog is hosted on an ultra-secure third-party server, and Fosmar was the only one who had access to it. He was extremely insistent on that."
"Are we sure that the transfer failed?"
Larina, Fosmar's senior financial officer, questioned through the intercom.
"Hey, if you don't believe me, you can come in here and look for yourself."
The frustrated technician pushed his chair away from the monitoring station, inviting the group to come into the clean room.
Okay. Then that's it, I guess.
Lorena nodded, then turned and walked to the door, pausing to say,
I'll tell the director of communication. She'll put out a press release and inform the board and the rest of the executive.
The door slammed behind her. Fosmar awoke in a shapeless space.
Wow! I made it! He called out in relief. Hey out there! I'm confirming that the upload succeeded. I'm here! I'm back! Connect me to the world! He demanded impatiently. I need everyone to know. I'm the first human to go post-biological, and now there's conscious life beyond physical death. Hey, I can live forever. Connect me. I'm the most important person in history. I've single-handedly changed the nature of existence.
Nevertheless, Fosmar's demands were met by silence.
Look, if I'm not connected in the next minute, you'll all be looking for new jobs. You assured me that this part of the process had been completely worked out and tested months ago.
The black nothingness seemed to close in around Fosmar, and for the first time in his life, uncertainty started to grow in his mind.
Am I dead?
He thought, then quickly dismissed the idea as ridiculous. He called out again in a rage.
I'll give you another minute to figure this out. And then, if you can't, I'll have your jobs eliminated and careers destroyed.
Indifferent silence instantly swallowed his anger. Lorena brushed her lanyard over the lock to the executive office. Nothing happened for a few seconds, making her think that security had changed the codes. Finally, the green light blinked and the heavy door clicked open. She pushed through and to her surprise found herself staring at Jason, who had installed himself in Fosmar's former desk. Several drawers in the cabinets that lined one wall of the otherwise austere, oversized office were open. On the glass-topped meeting table, the contents of Fosmar's diet supplements had been spilled out onto its glossy surface. It was common knowledge that Fosmar had been on an ultra-health kick to ensure he would live to use the transition process once it had been perfected. Jason had obviously been searching for something.
I thought we were on the same page, Jason. I'm the one we agreed would tidy things up. And Fosmar would never put anything important on paper, and hey, he'd never put it in a vitamin jar. He'd be too freaked out that the paper would leak dioxin into his precious pills,
she said sarcastically.
Jason, you should know that by now. And all that junk?
She pointed at the piles of supplements.
Didn't keep him alive, did they? But he still insisted everyone who worked for him take them too. I flushed mine down the toilet years ago. How about you?
I knew him well enough to know that he stored some things offline to keep him away from prying eyes.
Jason gave Lorena an accusing stare.
I was hoping that he had left some files on a thumb drive or something. You know, just in case. After all, he knew the process wasn't perfected yet, so there might be something that he left behind. Anyway, what are you doing here? I thought you'd be busy keeping up your end of things.
I'm still the CFO. There's a lot of unfinished business he and I were working on that can't wait 20 days to be tied up. If I suddenly stop following up on things, it'll attract unwanted attention. Now, if you don't mind.
Lorena nodded at the desk.
I need to get on that computer.
Jason reluctantly moved, allowing Lorena to slip into the large leather chair. He hung behind her for a moment, shoulder surfing, as she unfolded the built-in flat screen and waited for the terminal to boot.
This isn't meant for prying eyes, Jason,
she complained in a gently mocking tone.
And this is not the place to talk anyway.
Like we've discussed before, Jason persisted, he would have tried to remain in control of the company if the transfer had worked. Fosmar Gunnison, the world's first post-human CEO, and that would have caused the inevitable legal challenges. He and I talked about that a lot. After all, who'd believe it was him? And not just an expert system controlled by someone behind the scenes.
As long as that someone stopped wasting all the profits on crazy moonshots that have little hope of ever being viable, I might be able to live with that. However, we're not going to let that happen, are we, Jason?
Lorena whispered conspiratorially.
And that's why I'm here, looking for clues for a plan B, being proactive, looking out for our interests, just in case. If you stumble on anything.
Jason turned and walked toward the door.
I'll let you know.
Lorena completed the sentence.
And obviously, you don't know him as well as you think. He rarely had a plan B. It was always his way or nothing, Jason. But the cards are stacked against him this time.
She called after him.
To Fosmar, it appeared that he was floating in an infinite black silence. How long he had been there, he couldn't tell. He knew it was only supposed to take a few seconds to reboot his consciousness and connect to the outside world. But then, he was the first human to experience something like this, and what might only seem like a few moments in the physical world could subjectively be much longer to an unplugged mind riding at the speed of light on artificial synapses. There were many unknowns, and like everything else in his life, and now his extended life, he would leap in and figure it out before anyone else. Nothing and no one had ever been strong enough to stand in the path of his ambition, and that had been the key to his success. And even now, death, that ultimate career barrier, had apparently succumbed to its will.
"Hey, out there! I've made it! I'm here! I'm alive!"
He called again, trying to confirm his existence, but only the stubborn nothingness replied, causing questions to form in his mind. Was he still in transition? Was he still in the lab facility, barely hanging on to life? He had theorized that there would be a brief crossover moment before the transfer was complete, when his digital consciousness would still be receiving experiences from his dying one. Was the darkness coming from unseen eyes and the silence from dying ears? The surviving self would not experience the exact moment of death. The transfer would finish before then. However, during that short period, there would be two of them. And which one would be the real Fosmar? He had struggled with the dilemma many times in the years he had spent working on the project. The neural pathways, memories, and cognitive abilities would be indistinguishable at that point. Everything, down to the automatic brain functions that controlled his worn-out body, would be the same. His physical death would end the dilemma. But there was still the niggling issue that he could not resolve until he made the transition. What would those automated processes do when there was no heart to keep beating, or lungs to keep breathing? Were they the cause of the current situation? There had been a suggestion early on that there would just be baggage that he didn't need, but Fosmar had insisted on a complete copy of his mind, automatic functions and all, knowing that not to do so would create problems for his claim to his business empire. No. His neural patterns had to be verifiably an exact duplicate of the original. He would, of course, in due time, either dump those useless parts of his brain or repurpose them to control the hardware that now created his consciousness. But there was something wrong. He should have been able to access internal and external nets. He should be seen through a million web cameras, listening through every microphone in the world. Yet there is only darkness and silence. Was he the dying Fosmar? And not the digital one? Suddenly, words appeared in his mind, forming a message.
"Patience, Mr. Gunnarsson. You need to have patience. All I can do now is set up a news feed for you to keep occupied."
"Not good enough. Who are you? Where's my executives? Where's my lawyer? I demand to talk to them,"
he raged. Then the connection was broken, replaced with a text-only news feed. Lorena left the executive suite, closing the door behind her for the last time. She had barely managed to complete what she needed to do before the door codes had been changed. Every time she had come to the office, Jason had shown up and buzzed around her, making work almost impossible. But after 5 days of looking, the only document he could find was a confirmation that nothing could happen until the blog post went live. And his obsession was starting to focus unwanted attention on him. So Lorena took the back hallways to the elevator to avoid bumping into someone and being forced to answer awkward questions. She was about to exit through a service entrance when an all-too-familiar someone called out her name.
"Lorena."
She turned to see Jason beckoning for her to come back.
"Lorena, there's something you need to see." "What?"
she said irritably.
"It's Fosmar, or at least something that's claiming to be him. There's a press conference." "That can't be,"
she began to say, trying to keep calm.
"I know, but the press conference has already started. We need to get going."
Jason led her to an overflowing meeting room where most of the senior staff had gathered. On a large projection screen on one end was an avatar that was in the process of claiming it was Fosmar. They pushed in and stood against the back wall, watching the screen and the reactions in the room.
I am here today to reveal to the world the most important technical development in all of history,
the Fosmar simulacra confidently proclaimed.
It's an innovation that will change the way we live, that conquers the greatest challenge to us all, death. I physically died 5 days ago, but unlike Houdini, I have come back. Using a new proprietary technology, I was able to transfer my consciousness into a machine at the time of my death.
Larina looked at Jason suspiciously and whispered,
"Do you believe this?"
Jason shrugged.
"I don't know." "You still have things buttoned down, don't you?" "Yes, of course I do. Completely. This has to be something else. Someone exploiting the situation,"
Larina suggested.
"Could be an AI, but it'll still have to pass the tests. And that thing,"
Jason motioned to the screen, "will still have to stop the dead man post. Unless Fosmar physically comes back from the grave, we both know that what's in the post will carry the day. But there's only 15 left, Larina. We need to get going." They both listened unconvinced as the Fosmar simulacra prattled on.
"As a famous author once said, the rumors of my demise are greatly exaggerated."
The avatar awkwardly laughed. However, the room remained silent.
"Never could pull off a joke. At least whoever programmed it got that one right,"
Jason whispered.
"They've got the arrogance down right too,"
Larina added as the avatar continued.
"Although you know I take big risks when there is the possibility of huge returns. That, of course, is part of the public record of my success. What many of you don't know is that where possible, I do not do things without a backup. And I made one before I was diagnosed. I am that backup, set to initiate 5 days after the final transfer if my future copy didn't come online. He didn't. So I assume that for some reason the second transfer failed when I physically died."
"I didn't know about this. Did he tell you?"
Jason whispered angrily. At that moment, both Larina and Jason's cell phones chimed. Fosmar fumed for what seemed like hours, frustrated that he was helpless, that someone had control over him. However, he finally settled down and began to scan through the news. Mostly boring everyday things, unrest in some troubled country, a hurricane approaching some hapless island, a car accident, some announcement from the government that predictably elicited impassioned protests from opposition groups, sports scores, and the markets. But it was in the latter, in the market news, where he found it. The title leapt out, taunting him. Tech giant Boar's stock rises, an announcement that its founder invents method to beat death. Stunned, Fosmar read the headline again.
"No, that can't be. It's a fraud. We need to talk, now. I need connectivity,"
he yelled into the silence. In response, he thought he saw a tiny LED flash like a distant firefly. And somewhere, a text message, all in caps, appeared on a cell phone. Larina reached into her pocket and fished out her phone before Jason could get to his.
"It's him,"
she exclaimed.
"The avatar. It wants to arrange a meeting."
Jason looked at his phone and nodded.
"Okay. I guess the game's afoot." "What do you mean by that?"
He just smiled and put his phone away so she couldn't see it. Larina and Jason sat tensely in the executive office, waiting for the screen in Fosmar's former desk to spark to life. Neither said anything, both knowing that the hidden listening devices which riddled the room were most likely now turned on. The avatar was 5 minutes late.
"Just like when he was alive,"
Jason whispered.
"Intentionally late, so he can catch us talking about something he can use against us."
"I wasn't listening. Although that's a great idea, Jason. Thanks. I'll use it for my next meeting."
The screen popped to life.
"I forgot about the time. I was busy reviewing the data files of my death. I don't understand how the neuroscans were lost. It all transferred correctly, and there's no indication of any malfunction. We'll need to root that problem out before we can offer the service commercially.
His avatar feigned a smile.
Good thing I did a backup, huh? I'm thinking that around 500 million is not a bad price to gain immortality, and on top of that, there'll be annual maintenance fees. To keep it exclusive and keep the price high, we'll limit the service to maybe one or two a month. That'd create a nice revenue stream with over 1,000% profit margin. Lorena, you were always complaining about the development costs, but this will be the most profitable product I've created to date. Only 4 sales, and we'll break even. Now, I have work for the both of you.
But before you can get too far down that road, you still need to prove that you are actually Fosmar and not an AI.
Jason noted, trying to sound concerned.
Oh, that. The engram matching and Turing test. It'll be a breeze.
Fosmar's avatar dismissed lightly.
But...
Jason began to protest, but Laura kicked him under the table, then cut in.
Sorry, Jason, I want to ask the obvious question. If the transfer had been successful, then there would have been 2 of you. How would have that worked?
Simple. I would not have been initiated. I personally programmed that into the system, then had the memory of my backup suppressed so my ongoing self wouldn't know about it. It's the ultimate dead man switch. A safeguard against, well, anything that could go wrong. And in order to work, no one could know about it, not even me. And as it turns out, it was a smart move. That transfer failure is pretty suspicious. I'm looking into that very carefully.
He formed a feral, pixelated smile.
But that's an interesting hypothetical question, Lorena. What would happen if there were 2 of us? Who would be the true Fosmar Gunnison? Not having experienced all those months of illness and mental decline, I like to think that I'd be the closest to the original. In that sense, I'd be the most complete version, the closest in thought process, to classic Gunnarsson. Jason, what's your opinion?
I don't know. There are no legal precedents. It wasn't a possibility when we discussed the implications of your eventual transfer, at least as far as I knew back then. Unless, before you made yourself forget about your backup, you left some direction on how to handle a situation like this.
Jason probed.
Well, it's an interesting thought exercise, and we'll talk about it as we commercialize the system, so it can't happen. But right now, I've emailed you both tasks I need you to do. I have a lot of other meetings lined up, so you'll have to excuse me now.
The screen abruptly snapped off. Lorena and Jason's phones chimed at once. Jason looked at his.
Our marching orders,
he grumbled.
Let's go have a coffee,
Lorena suggested.
Oh,
she exclaimed after checking her cell phone.
My battery's running low. I need to plug my phone into the charging station. I'll do that, then meet you in the lobby. You know, you might want to check yours as well.
Jason nodded.
Okay, I'll see you in the lobby.
It wasn't until they were a block away from the building that they said anything.
You left your phone in the charger in your office, right?
Lorena quizzed.
Yes, but I think you're getting a bit paranoid. I doubt it'd have enough access yet to spy on us through our phones. We don't know that. Just like we didn't know about his backup. But the backup isn't aware of anything that Fosmar did in his last few months.
So it doesn't know about the dead man blog post, and everyone has a vested interest in not telling it,
Jason added, finishing Lorena's thought.
Fosmar announced the post would be his last will and testament in that board meeting he attended from his hospice bed the month before he died. That's well documented. So unless he left something else, that's it. He always knew that there would be years of litigation around this. There's no legal precedence, and I told him that. I told him that he needed to designate someone to hold the company in trust while his claim to be alive worked his way through the courts. I wanted him to document that, but he made the dead man post instead. I've got no idea what's in it, Lorena, or whether he listened to me. And that's why we agreed to do whatever needed to be done to stop this craziness. isn't it, Jason? That's why we hijacked his doppelganger, to force it into giving us his password. We both know that thing will never be declared alive. But now we have two of them to deal with.
They turned the corner of the street and stopped in front of a coffee shop. A wintry breeze funneled between the buildings, making them both shiver.
Maybe we need to rethink this, Lorena,
Jason suggested, pulling his collar up to keep his ears warm.
Our goal wouldn't change, Jason. We still need access to that blog.
Lorena stared at him, daring him to contradict her, then turned and laughed.
Think about it. I'll see you back in the office.
Fosmar.
The name seemed to come from nowhere and everywhere.
Fosmar. Fosmar, we need to talk.
We do indeed,
Fosmar replied. Then he strategically waited for his captor to start the conversation. He didn't want to reveal yet what he had discovered.
I assume you've read the news feeds?
Who are you?
Silence greeted Fosmar's question.
I'm not going to talk unless I know who you are.
That's not important. Right now we need to talk about the other one. You've read the claims?
I didn't do a backup. Why would I? It was all or nothing. I'm the only one. I'm the true Fosmar.
But your doppelganger has explained why you wouldn't know about it, and it was confirmed by the lab security logs this morning. You ran a test transfer on yourself 6 months before your diagnosis, then blocked your memory of it.
There was a long pause.
Well, then there's two of me,
Fosmar finally conceded.
And it will take three things for you to take control of the company. Your other self has two. You have all three. But then, no one knows about you. And without my help, you can't do anything.
So you want the password to my blog, correct?
Fosmar demanded.
After all, you know that's my only bargaining chip. But I'm not an unreasonable man, and I'm not about to let someone like you stop me. But I know when my options are limited. So let's cut a deal then. One that all three of us will prosper from. But before we start, tell me, what type of cologne do you wear?
What?
Humor me, answer the question.
Essence, why?
There was a hint of it in the air during the transfer. And the dust. There shouldn't have been dust. Someone had been in the lab. I'm just checking to make sure that I'm dealing with the right player. One can never be too careful when you're dealing with your opponent,
Fosmar replied.
And I'm not surprised who you are. In fact, I'm kind of glad it's you. We've always been able to come to terms.
It had been almost 20 days since Fosmar's death when Lorena and Jason found themselves sitting at the back of a crowded boardroom where a large screen had been hastily set up, covering the hardwood panels that dominated one end of the space. A web browser was opened on the screen, pointed to Fosmar's personal blog. Most of the room's occupants were glancing expectantly between the screen and their phones, checking the time. Exactly at 12:12, the web page refreshed, revealing a video and some text. The video was from a security camera in the transition lab, and it was already playing. The time and date were burnt into the lower right-hand corner, revealing that it was early morning the day of Fosmar's failed transfer. For a while, nothing happened. Then a figure wearing a winter parka entered the room, nervously looked around, then quickly headed over to the neuroscanning unit. The face was obscured in the shade of the hood. The figure wedged a small module from the side of the machine, put it in their pocket, then replaced it with another, turned, and hurried out, trying to keep their back to the camera. The video stopped, then moved backward to the point where the figure was in mid-turn. A single frame caught a shadowy face. Then the video zoomed in, until the illegible pixeled face filled the screen. Slowly, the image began to be enhanced, until Lorena found she was staring at a picture of herself.
I wasn't there. It's not me. It's him. It was Jason,
she accused.
Jason calmly leaned over and whispered to Lorena. It was just a few frames. Not hard to do at all. The text below the video designates me as CEO. I get a third, and they retain controlling interest behind the scenes. We reveal the existence of both Fosmars, and they get to continue working on moonshots. So much simpler. No legal issues. But to make the narrative work, to explain what happened to the transfer, someone had to be thrown in front of the bus. Sorry, Lorena.
Outside, down in the street, a cyclist narrowly missed being hit by a truck. The barista in a coffee shop around the corner accidentally made a lopsided leaf pattern in the foam of a latte. And somewhere, two identical artificial sentient beings began to work out who they were and how they could coexist. It was just another ordinary day, as the world continued on.
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 96, An Ordinary Day. We hope that you've enjoyed this month's episode. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us, or write a review on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, or check us out on Google+ and Facebook. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. And thanks to those who have already emailed us from all over the planet. We release a new story every month, approximately between the 15th and the 20th. To listen to Makeshift Stories on your iOS or Android device, please download Stitcher Radio from iTunes or the Google Play Store. This month's episode was written and read by Alan V. Hare. The opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by David Hume. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means that you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.